Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoins, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne chose! Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Wouhou! Pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Monday, May 6th. How is everyone doing? And thank you for watching the Sick Podcast on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter, in all transparency. And I keep on saying it every night of the playoffs. This podcast was recorded prior to the hockey game. Why? Because everyone who's anyone in the media or in the hockey world, they want to watch the NHL playoffs. And they don't want to be on a podcast at 10 p.m. at night when a game is going on that started at 8 p.m. and isn't finished yet. And obviously, I'm talking about the Boston-Florida game, which started at 8 p.m. tonight. So this was right before the game, that is. All right. So thank you very much for watching. We appreciate it. And I'm going to talk to you about Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. I'm also going to talk to you, of course, about Labitte TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. Labitte TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. Also want to talk to you about Playground, that is. WPT Montreal is taking over Playground once again, featuring two live-streamed and fully televised events. Dive into the action with the WPT 500 Montreal Championship, WPT Prime Montreal Championship, and the Grand WPT Montreal Championship with over 4.2 million in total guarantees. It's a series you won't want to miss. Mark your calendars from May 9th to May 22nd for nonstop poker excitement. For more information, visit playground.ca. Don't miss out on the action at Playground, where the cards come alive. All right, so there you have it. We'll get to Access Insurance Solutions a little bit later on. I want to say thank you and hello to all of our sponsors. Without further ado, let's bring in our collaborator, usually a regular collaborator on Monday nights, Eric Engels from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. How you doing, bud?
What's up, Tony?
It's all good. All good. Hey, I want to mention that tomorrow night is NHL Draft Lottery Night. So, of course, we're going to find out where the Montreal Canadiens are going to select tomorrow night. The draft lottery is going to take place live on Sportsnet Television and TVA Sport at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night. So I'm going to do a special draft lottery live tomorrow. So tomorrow night's show is actually a special show at 6 p.m. Shane Gaumont and Master Control, whenever you have the graphic that we put up earlier today about tomorrow night's show being a special 6 p.m. show, put it up if you can. It'll last, I would imagine, about an hour or so. Grant McCagg is going to join me at at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. And he's going to stick around. And Simon the Snake Boisvert is going to join me at around 6:30 p.m. So they're all going to give their opinions. They're going to give their opinions on, you know, where the Canadians are drafting and who they think will be available, and where other teams will be drafting and who they think those they will take. And they'll give us a scouting report on all these players. And this is why they do what they do, and they scout 12 months a year. And so we're going to get to that. So tomorrow night, once again, very special NHL draft lottery show starting at 6 p.m. right here on the Sick Podcast. All right, Eric, I know you covered the first round of the playoffs. I know you continue to cover the playoffs. I know you covered Winnipeg and Colorado. Should I tease you about your prediction right now? Or?
Yeah, I had the Jets in five.
Yeah. You know, this is the year where I feel the best about my predictions, and I'm going to tell you why. The two I got wrong, they were both decided by one goal. So I had Toronto beating Boston. Yes, I know I'm stupid to take Toronto versus Boston. And I had Vegas over Dallas. And we all know by now that Toronto lost in overtime and Vegas lost game seven and Dallas by a score of 2-1. So, you know, it's probably the best I've been with my predictions in quite some time. With a little bit of luck, I could have been 7-1. With a little bit more luck, I could have been 8-0. So I'll take the
6-5-8. I went 5-8, but the teams that I predict will go to the Stanley Cup final are still alive and looking like the top contenders. So we'll see what happens.
Who do you have in the Stanley Cup final?
I had Dallas and Florida.
Dallas and Florida, yeah.
Which is probably going to come back as a theme in this discussion we're about to get into. But
yeah, I did kind of like two pools. I had Florida and Vegas in one, and I had Florida and Colorado in the other. Anyway, I have a few dollars. I shouldn't say this, but I'll say it anyway. I have a few dollars on Florida to win, Dallas to win, actually, even in Vegas, too, even though they actually played against each other. But I didn't know they were playing against each other when I put a few dollars down. And Colorado. I'm not so sure if I have Edmonton. I have to check. But anyway, those are the teams. But I'm pulling for the Edmonton Oilers, even if I don't have money on them. I'm pulling for the Edmonton Oilers to win the Stanley Cup because I've always wanted the best players in the world to win the Cup. And Connor McDavid's that guy, and I want him to win it.
All right. Funny you mentioned Florida and Dallas first. I'm kind of wondering why you put money on them.
What
is it about those teams?
Okay, so I put money on Florida and Vegas.
Yeah.
The second the trade deadline was over, or actually going second it was over at 3 o'clock on that Friday, I just looked at them and I thought that they're the ones that had reinforced the teams and were the deepest. And prior to me putting money on them, I thought Dallas was very deep. And I thought Colorado was very deep. So I had money on Dallas and Colorado before the trade deadline. And I put money on Florida and the Vegas that Friday at 3 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah. Deep teams. Yeah. Deep teams that if they have an injury or two, they can still serve. They can still get by. They can still win a playoff series. They're the teams that I thought had the most depth, the key positions. Obviously some teams have what other teams don't. I mean, Dallas, has a more renowned goalie than Colorado, for example, but Colorado's got in Cale Makar, I think, the best defenseman in the world. So there's some teams that have certain things that others don't, but those are the teams that
I know. Sorry. I know you usually ask me the questions, but I have a couple.
Yeah,
for you.
Sure. Go ahead.
What did you think was the best series of the first round of the playoffs?
It's a good question.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
usually when you answer this question, you don't answer series that are over in five, right? So I'm going to have to avoid those. I thought Nashville-Vancouver was boring. Thought it was boring.
Fair.
I thought Carolina and the Islanders was actually pretty exciting.
I think I should actually reframe the question. It's like,
yeah, only went five.
What was the series that you watched that you were kind of like, either one of these teams would be a Stanley Cup winner in any year? Like,
well, my opinion was Vegas-Dallas going into the playoffs before they faced each other. Was like, once I found that they were facing each other, I was like, man, those teams got a bad hand, because if they would have avoided each other, they probably could have gone, you know, very, very far. So, but the team that impressed me the most in round one, if we forget about their first game where they gave up seven, was Colorado. Like, I thought that once Colorado put it in fifth gear, mm-hmm. Winnipeg couldn't keep up. I don't know if I've said that about any other team. Carolina, maybe. But once Colorado put it in fifth gear, they took off. Maybe more so than other series. What do you think?
Yeah, like,
Florida too.
I don't think there's any debate in terms of like the reframed question that I asked you, that you look at Dallas and Vegas in that series, and those are two teams playing to win the Stanley Cup. Like, those are two teams playing the style that wins the Stanley Cup, and they are two teams that execute that style better than anybody, certainly in their conference, and only rivaled potentially in the East by Florida. And I think if you probably pulled hockey fans, despite New York winning the President's Trophy and Carolina being such a threatening team, and Colorado being as high-octane offensively as they are and how they proved to be in the first round, I thought they were incredible. As you know, I was at every single one of those games. I think everybody has the same answer, that you look at Dallas and Vegas and just say, okay, this is what wins in the playoffs. So it says a lot about how, if you're a team out there, like the Montreal Canadiens, for example, that's building from scratch up, because, you know, we say the word rebuild and this and that, it really, like, the Canadiens, rebuild fits instead of a build from scratch, because they did inherit a lot of pieces. But at the end of the day, like, they have been developing their own core of players. Like, a lot of the pieces they inherited are maturing at the same rate under the guys that are there now, right? Like, so,
yeah,
it's I just think I would be looking at Dallas and Vegas and saying, how do we build our team this way? How do we build our team to make it impossible to get to the middle of the ice, to make it impossible for the star talent to shine through unless it's on your side? Like, that was just big boy hockey. That hockey to me was on another level than what we saw in any other series in the playoffs. I think as we move forward through the playoffs, we're going to see a bit more of it, just because of the teams that advance and the matchups that are there. New York and Carolina is going to be a great series. But, you know, in Montreal, we keep hammering away the Canadians need elite talent. They need elite talent. And it's true. You do. You absolutely do. The cream rises to the top. But it can't just be talent and that's the only thing that you get. You know, like, you need guys who are willing to do certain things that help you win at this time of year. And that's why Winnipeg's watching the rest of the playoffs, and why Toronto is watching the rest of the playoffs, because they only realized it four games into their series, despite their history of not playing a style that's conducive to winning. And, you know, it's why Edmonton, even if a lot of people are excited about them this year and they have a much easier path to the cup final than they've ever had before, like, they still have to go out and prove that they can win, you know, like, but you look at those, I think if before the playoffs started, everybody looked at Dallas and Vegas and said, who's going to be able to play with these guys the way they play?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I want to do today is the first round is over, and I want to recap basically overall thoughts, impressions, what you saw, and talk about the Canadians. Like, one of the things we've been doing when we take a look at our report card is taking a look at some of the Canadians players and saying, okay, well, if Nick Suzuki is a number one centerman, let's compare him with all the number one centermen in the playoffs. And if Gouley's first pairing shutdown defenseman, let's compare him with first pairing shutdown defenseman in the playoffs. Why don't we compare Canadians with the playoffs now? You know, I think at the end of the year, they made it clear, the Canadians management team did and coaching staff, that, you know, their goal is to make the playoffs next year, but not cutting corners to get there. At the very least, they want to be a team that it wants to be knocking on the door. They want to play some very competitive games in the month of March and the month of April. And, you know, if you make it, fantastic. And if you don't make it, kind of put yourself in a situation like, you know, you're 3-4 points out and every game is a big one. You take a look, every year the playoffs are different. Refs call it one way, they call it another way. Teams play one way, teams play another way. What are your impressions thus far in the first round?
The way we've always seen it in the playoffs, which is they don't call it at all. You know, like the penalties go away, the whistles go away. It's good to have a great power play and build good habits through the regular season, so that when you do get that one a game in an elimination game, like we've seen over the last two game sevens, you can bury it and end up winning the game. You know, that's one thing that is so clear. You know, as much as we talk about promoting offense in the game, like 5-on-5, I was talking with an executive from the league about this. Like, McDavid leads the playoffs in scoring, I think, with 12 points, unless I'm mistaken.
And yeah,
like 3 or 4 of them were produced at even strength. Now, so you can look at it and say, okay, well, you know, like, his talent isn't just to be able to put the pucks in the net or set up the plays that lead to goals, right? Like, it also leads to getting on the power play much more than other teams have in the playoffs. Edmonton got the most power plays in that series with LA, and LA ended up 16th because Edmonton's star players drive that type of game being called. But I mean, man, like, look at Dallas, Vegas, and Toronto, Boston, and just, there's not a lot of penalty calls. You have to be able to play at 5-on-5, and at 5-on-5, there's not a lot of space to create goals, and you're so structured and defensively responsible to ensure that you're not going to give up the one opportunity that ends up in the back of your net. It's a game of patience. It's still exciting. Like, the playoffs, like, the moniker that the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy in sports to win rings true.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. And we'd have to be very careful about changing the way the game is called so that we don't lose that. But, you know, you said you called Nashville and Vancouver boring, right?
Yeah, I thought it was boring.
If we don't see more games like we saw in game one between New York and Carolina, are we going to be looking at these playoffs and saying we got to change something? Because there's not a lot of goals being scored, especially at 5-on-5.
No, there's not a lot of goals being scored 5-on-5. You're right. There's less and less penalties being called. You're right. Another thing that I'm noticing, though, is I'm noticing big guys a lot in the playoffs. And I know that last year's MVP was not a very big guy, and Jonathan Marchessault, so I don't want to rule out the small players. But some of these game six, some of these game sevens, they're built on a lot of battles. And I'm noticing a lot, like the other night, Brazil really caught my attention for Boston.
Yeah. That's, you know? That's 100% the takeaway that you have to have. And that's why I said, like, while everybody points at the Canadians and says, you need to acquire elite talent, you need to acquire. Yes, you do. And you talk about making the playoffs next year. It's not just about adding talent to your team, just talent that ends up being able to put up points in the regular season and get you there, because there's no point in adding that talent if it blocks you from building a Stanley Cup contender with players that actually get you through there. Like, the players that score in the playoffs are either big or play big. Wyatt Johnson is not a huge player, but he plays big. And like, we talk about all the big goals that he scored for Dallas in that series. Like, with a minute left in the game against Vegas in game seven, he has a huge shot block and then crushes somebody in the neutral zone with a hit. Like, the Canadians have a player like that already. Like, Nick Suzuki is that player. If the Canadians get into the playoffs and you're looking for a player who's not that big but plays really big, he's already proven it. He's already shown, even from a very young age, that is in his DNA. Caulfield plays bigger than he is. He's not afraid to get in the middle. We know that from the goal locations that he put up this year and putting up 28 goals. Slafkovský, if you're wondering why he was chosen first overall, a lot of it is the adaptation that he's kind of put together. That you see how quickly he's turned weaknesses into strengths. That's kind of what separates a number one guy. But when you see a frame with the skill set that he has at 6'3", 238 coming out of Slovakia and Finland in the Finnish league, playing that way against pros at the World Championships, it's not a secret anymore as to why he went number one overall. And then, you know, if you were doubting it before, you're encouraged by the progression you saw this year, but you're definitely watching these playoffs and saying, ooh, it's a good thing Montreal has that guy and not some of the other guys that people wanted them to pick. Like, so you can't just add – the Canadians need talent. Nobody's debating that. They need forward talent. Mm-hmm. But you better go get the right guys. Like, you better go get the guys that have the will to make up for size they don't have, or the size and the will to enable a Suzuki or a Caulfield to do what they do as well. Like, you can't win without it. Go look up and down the roster of the Dallas Stars, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Colorado Avalanche, and the Florida Panthers. Four teams that everybody would consider to be the top contenders in these playoffs. Like, it's filled with guys who have will and size, and that matters just as much as elite talent.
What have you thought of the goaltending thus far in the playoffs?
Like, it's been excellent with the exception of the team that beat Winnipeg in five. Like, I think Colorado's goaltending is probably the only reason I don't put them in the same category. Like, they just won the Cup 2 years ago, and they won it with Darcy Kuemper. So who am I to say it? But, like, and not disrespecting Darcy Kuemper, he played well. Was he on the same level as Swayman against Toronto? No. Was he on the same level as Ottinger in the last few playoffs that we've watched? No. But can Gergiev be at the level that he was at against Winnipeg and beat Dallas? He's got to step up. And he did step up after that first game where he looked like mm-hmm. he got beat seven times and could have been beat 20 the way he played. But he also looked throughout the four consecutive wins that came after that as though any shot could beat him. And that would be my main, like, they're going to have to do a much better job protecting him against Dallas team that will not be impatient like Winnipeg and try to force things through the middle and feed their transition. So
if these teams that were in the playoffs in the first round had Montembeau as their goalie, would it be a big drop off for these teams?
So for which teams? For the ones won? For the ones that won or the ones that lost?
That's a good question. The ones that won, it wouldn't be a big drop off because they well, okay, let's just say, all right, it's hard to say that.
Yeah, Colorado would have won in four if they had Montembeau in
there. Yeah, okay, Colorado would have won in four. chances are Montembeau wouldn't do better than Bobrovsky or Shesterkin. I think UC Saros did everything in his ability to win that series. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for him. There's a great story in Vancouver, obviously, with the goalie. Toronto had a couple of goalies. I thought Wall was good. Samsonov was not bad until the overtime. Probably would want to have that one.
I don't think Samsonov cost them game seven.
Yeah.
You can blame three players on that decisive play, but it's also David Pastrnak making, a playoff, an elite play from Hampus Lindholm, two elite guys, which certainly speaks how important it is to have elite players.
It's pretty odd, though, that if you take a look at the players that were on the ice, Toronto had Nylander, Marner, Tavares, and Riley. They had four of their five best players on the ice.
Yeah.
And they got scored on.
And they had, three of them had a – it's like, I think people look at them and like, look at their effort on this play. It's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. It's game seven overtime. If you don't think they want to win, you're insane. They had a mental lapse in a moment, like, and a shocking one, considering how they played those three games.
I don't think it was the effort. I think it was just everyone thought the next guy was going to have them, right?
They all lost their concentration for a minute. I could tell you, now, I don't know what it looks like at ice level where the game goes a lot faster, but as soon as David Pastrnak picked up speed from his own blue line, the play that was developing was very obvious. Like, it was not a set play. Some of the guys called it a set play. It was a good read. It was a good read by Hampus Lindholm, who saw Pastrnak's going. He's got a step on Marner, who's coming off the bench. Riley's too far in the middle. He's not close enough you want to, as a defenseman, stay within the dots, but he's out of position. And Samsonov reacts late in the end. But all of them kind of have this type of mental lapse that costs you a game at the most important moment. And it, to me, it's shocking, because if you look at the detail with which Toronto played over the last three games of that series, it's like, how do you make a mistake like that? How do you make three mistakes like that, considering how well they played defensively to get back into that series?
Up until that mistake, the last three games, that's the probably best I've seen Toronto play playoff hockey in a long time.
Yeah, the problem is, why did it take them four games to realize that's the way you need to play? And then this is the theme of our conversation.
Because they'd rather not play that way, right? Because they have players who aren't you. They have players who like the open play. But open play, it doesn't happen that much in the playoffs unless you're Connor McDavid and you're able to go through everyone like they're not even there.
That's why if anybody's out there still debating whether or not this core should remain intact, they shouldn't. Because there's something that's developed within that core and within the culture of the team that they haven't learned from the mistakes of the past. That, you know, you look at like Washington when they won the Stanley Cup, a lot of people said the same thing about them. Or Tampa Bay, who had to go through their trials and tribulations, stepped out, you know, they were swept out of the playoffs by a Columbus team that was far inferior to them. They learned, though. They learned you can't just rely on this ability that you have and score goal when the whistles go away and it's no holds barred and it looks like Dallas versus Vegas, where there's no space to get into the middle of the ice even if you get the puck there. You can't win unless a certain will and culture is developed. And why did it take Toronto four games after all their playoff failings to get there? Because their scars that they have had and developed over years are too deep. Like, there's too much trauma that has happened to this team to get over the hump. And listening to William Nylander say we're right there and John Tavares we're right there, and like, they're not. They need some fundamental change within right in the middle of it to get over the hump. Players that have been there and done it and know what it takes and start from game one, not game four. Like, they played – I totally agree with you, Tony. Their three games, the grittiest I've seen since 1993 – of like where the Toronto Maple Leafs were. They played the way you need to play to win in the playoffs. Their goal scorers didn't come through. They had injuries that they battled through and all that. Maybe it comes down to a bounce. But like, for them to even have put themselves in that position tells you everything you need to know about their core. Winnipeg, I was just there. And like, this is where, this is kind of what I wanted to get to with you. It's like, people look at like the Canadians and what's happened with Marty over the last year and us writers who have talked about the development of culture and why that was as important as where they end up in the standings and the draft lottery that's coming tomorrow. And they dismiss it. But when you have these growing players at 20, 21, 22, 23, you have to develop that stuff now. So you don't end up in a situation where you're Winnipeg and you have guys like Mark who don't have the accountability. Where's the accountability after you lose?
This is a great topic. My buddy Rob called me yesterday morning. I was driving to Quebec City. My son had a soccer game in Quebec. I was driving down. I got a phone call from my buddy Rob. I answered a call, and we start talking right away about the Leafs and the Bruins. And he says to me, you know, a case study can be built about Toronto, about the way they went about it, and the fact that they haven't had success up until this point. And he says, I think the Canadians should look at it so they could basically identify where Toronto's gone wrong so far as to avoid making the same mistake going forward. And 24 hours after that phone call with Rob, you're talking about the same thing, basically, essentially.
Yeah. Like, I was just around the Jets, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think Mark Scheifele's an excellent hockey player. I think Connor Hellebuck was the best goalie in the world from October to April. And I think,
but they don't play their best player, their best hockey in the playoffs. That's the problem.
And even more than that, when we talk about culture and will and what it takes to win, okay? Game four that Winnipeg played, where they went down 3-1 to Colorado. It was their worst game in the series. Mark Scheifele finished the game with zero shots on net. He spent the game chasing the puck, and Hellebuck, once again, who had to come up with his best game, came up with probably his worst one of the series, despite the fact that he gave up six in the first game where he actually gave off an error. Like, I'm confident. I'm calm. I got this. It doesn't matter. I'll stop the last one. They were both requested to speak. Hellebuck took a pass. And Scheifele came out and started pointing out that they need to make adjustments. Colorado's made adjustments. We haven't made adjustments. It was a weak character moment. Like, you have a game like that where you got to come up with your best and you come up with your worst and you come out and start pointing at the coaching tactics and stuff like there's only one thing to say after situations like that. It's, you know, we didn't play well enough. It starts with me. I got to be better. Somebody brings up a play that you made in the game. You say, I'm not going to get into that. I need to be better. We all need to be better. We're going to be better. That's the only thing you have to say. Hellebuck, at the end of the series, comes out and talks about how he played the best hockey of his life, allowing 24 goals in five games, and how people are going to take exception to it. And you're damn right. People are going to take exception to it because he didn't play at the level that he did throughout the regular season. Now, the Winnipeg Jets did not give him a chance to win that series.
No.
But on top of him making those comments, when he's given a fishing line and told, hey, like, what about the team in front of you and where did you see things go wrong? And he starts talking about intensity and that. Why are you even taking that bite? Like, real leaders don't start throwing everybody else under the bus, even when it's presented to them, even when it's true. Like, and that stuff is these character traits that we're witnessing with two guys who are world-class players, by the way.
Yeah.
They developed at an age where they were coming along in Winnipeg with guys that like Blake Wheeler were there. You know, Rick Bonus, who just retired today, he came out after the series at his final press conference or whatever it was, and he took ownership of them losing. He said, it's on me. It's on me to get them to the place
where they're going to be. And that's incredible to do so, especially when you know it's probably going to be the last thing you're going to say and the last thing you're probably going to be remembered for by some. You know, that's something.
This shit matters. Culture matters, and it is developed at a very young age. Dallas has a very healthy one. Wyatt Johnson is 20 years old. Look at what he's doing. Look at the examples he has around him. And by the way, Joe Pavelski,
he's the future number one centerman if you don't have him labeled as number one already, because if you're giving it to Rupen Hintz, it's Johnson's as of next year.
You could look at Joe Pavelski, who's 39 years old, who doesn't have a cup, who has 0 points in the playoffs so far. If he's not there, is Wyatt Johnson doing what he's doing right now? Like, he needs to learn from people like
that. He's got a great mentor. Like that. Great mentor, yeah.
And look, do I think Joe Pavelski is going to continue going with – I know he's slowed down a little, but he still had 67 points this year, and he had 77 last year and had 9 goals, 14 points, and 14 playoff games last year. I don't think he just fell off a map. I would be surprised if we get through this series against Colorado and we're talking about Pavelski having zeros next to his name by the time it's done. And he's probably playing with something, as everybody is at this time of year, especially watching that series. But, like, you need guys around who show you what it takes to win, and it needs to be developed at a very young age in the NHL. Like, those guys – that's why the stuff that we saw with Marty and him taking Cole Caulfield – while everybody debated, you know, he's not scoring the goals and this and that. And Marty talking about Steven Stamkos being a better player now than he was when he was scoring 60 goals. Develop it at 21, 22, 23. Because let me tell you, by the time Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon get done putting the finishing touches on what they hope to be a contender here, if that culture is not embedded at the root of it, you're not beating the teams they have to go through to get there. And, like, last thing I'll say, like, just before I leave it to you.
Yeah.
Dallas, whether they make it or not, they have to go through – they finished with the best record in their division and have to go through Vegas and Colorado just to get to the conference final.
Yeah, like, it's crazy.
It's
crazy. Listen, another thing I'm noticing, balance. The teams that have that made it past the round one and are going to make it past round, they have balance. I think it was Marc Bergevin when he was hired. He basically said that, you know, one of the things he wanted to have was a team that can play anyway, any style of hockey, an offensive game they could win, a defensive game they could win, a hard-checking game they could win, a very tight game they can win, a very open game they can win. And that's what I'm noticing. You're going to need balance. And obviously, the Canadians don't have it right now. For sure, they don't. how far off are they from having as much balance as it'll take to compete to maybe win a round in the playoffs?
Yeah, like I think it comes down to two factors. One is actual pieces, and I think, you know, the Canadians need to add two legitimate top six forwards, not one top six guy and one top nine guy.
Ideally, like, big bodies, Eric.
Yeah, Tony, we'll get into that, and that is 100% the case, because there's things that are coming here in terms of them building to this team. They need legitimately, it's not one top six guy and one guy in the top nine who could play as a top six. No, they need two top six guys so that if you have an injury, some of those other guys who are definitive top nine guys who can play in the top six can, you know, replace them and do the job. Like, you need it's top down. But the other thing you need is experience. And it's very critical that when we started the beginning of last season, the Canadians had four defensemen on their blue line who had 10 games between them in the NHL, and all of them belonging to Jordan Harris. You want to see this thing come together when it's supposed to. It's a good thing those guys started when they did, because it takes about 300 games before you have the proper experience in the league to get to a place where you can do damage and be a more complete product and understand everything that it takes to play in the league, let alone what it takes to win. So I think it's the pieces. There's a couple pieces that you absolutely need to add for this team to get to the next level. And I think they will be added over the next 2 years, one for sure by this summer, one drafted, and potentially that comes a year later, or it starts but isn't quite where you need it to be.
The one for sure you're talking about is a second line winger, correct?
Yeah. And by the way, I think the trade happening. Yeah, I think the Canadians will make a trade to get that type of player. I don't know who it is, but depending on who they get with it, and you brought up size, right? And this is why I come back to the first thing I said when we started this conversation. It's not just adding talent for the sake of adding talent. It has to fit within the blueprint of what is going to get you through the playoffs. So if you go out and get a guy, take two guys that have been rumored the most in Montreal, Marty Nikash, or Trevor Zegras. They're talented, top six talent every day of the week, okay?
Did you see the images of Zegras and Slavkovsky talking up at the...
I did. I'm sure it won't fuel anything.
At the Worlds? Yeah.
But the point I was going to make is, if you go out and trade for one of those guys, and I'm not saying the Canadians are going to, that's fine. They are legitimate top six talents. But don't expect the Canadians to do that and draft Berkeley Cap. Like, you have got, there's no, take a look at the top six forwards for all the contenders, all the teams that you would consider contenders in the league right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have two guys who look like Cole Caulfield. You may have one within each top six, but you don't have two. You need guys who are willing to play bigger than they are and guys who are just bigger.
So if Cole Iserman's available, you don't see the Canadians drafting him.
Well, Cole Iserman has proven that he can score goals from everywhere, right?
Okay.
So I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if the Canadians...
Is he not the player in the draft that's... Look, and we're not going to pretend he's a player in the draft.
What's Cole Iserman's size?
Yeah, he's bigger than Caulfield.
He's close to... I'm just saying...
He's closer to 6 feet, yeah.
If the drafted piece ends up being... Katten, who's one of the small, or the Finnish kid, who's one of the undersized forwards with elite talent, then the trade piece can't be a Zegras or a Nikash. It's got to be something heavier than that. So it's just, you talk about balance, right? That word you used. Team building comes down to balance also. It's not just, well, the Canadians need elite talent, so any elite talent that they can find, they better add. Like, no, you better balance it out. Otherwise, you got too much of one thing, and it's not enough of what you need to win. Like,
we'll end with this. You said something interesting before when you said, goals aren't scored 5-on-5 anymore, not that many anyway. And what's even harder is that there's not that many penalties that are given compared to regular season games. Discipline. Discipline, we've talked about it before, but it's so big come playoff time. Discipline is so huge, and... You talked about culture. I know you see Marty's expressions when his team takes a bad penalty. Some of his players take a bad penalty. You know, you can tell that he'd like to see Jack Eye, for example, probably cut down on some of the penalties that he takes. There were one or two expressions in particular this year during a game, and it was a tight game, and they probably thought took the wrong penalty at the wrong time. Some will come out, you know, St. Louis doesn't like Jack Eye. I think it goes back to culture, though, right? You're trying to form habits of what will be winning habits down the line.
Yeah, I think there's two ways of what, like Marty always says, I take care of the guys who take care of the team. Maybe some people don't know what that means. What it means is he takes care of the people that put the team first. And the hope is that everybody puts the team first and he's the boss of the team, right?
Yeah.
Now, the game is played differently in the regular season than it is in the playoffs. And some of the penalties that Jack Eye gets in the regular season won't be called in the playoffs. And they'll be very happy he's doing those things. What you can't accept in your culture are selfish penalties, are the ones where the selfish penalties that Bertuzzi and Domi took at the beginning of the Toronto series with Boston that cost them, you know, one of the games that could have ended this series with them winning. Like, and you could look at it and say, well, they were trying to wear down the opposition, like, but they were undisciplined and cost them a game. Like, it's all built over time. I know this, like, the Canadians are on the healthier side of culture. It doesn't mean it's not still developing. It's something that is still developing, and as more and more pieces get added to the puzzle here and all these young players graduate to the next level and join the team, it's good that the foundation has already been set. They have a healthy culture. This is a team that worked its ass off all season long, and it's a team that's sitting and watching these playoffs, probably making the same observations you and I are, that you don't win just filling the net and riding your skill, and you need to sacrifice something that I will give hockey players credit for that, like, you and I wouldn't be willing to do out there. You want to know one main conclusion, Tony?
Yeah.
The Dallas Stars won Game 7 against a team that was isolated, a $94 million roster or whatever it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
A team that just won Stanley Cup, a team that shuts down the middle of the ice better than any team in the league. I don't care where they finished in the regular season. It's why they won the cup last year. Dallas won game 7, 2-1. Jake Oettinger made 22 saves. The players in front of him made 24. You want to do what it takes to win. You're a player out there playing for a team that's watching these playoffs instead of playing in them, go watch that game 7. You're not going to have any questions after that. That's what it takes. And you need certain players that have that. You need a culture that endorses that and absolutely believes in that above all. And nothing short of that gets you there. And I don't know if Dallas is going to win the cup this year, but I look at Dallas, I look at Florida, I look at Vegas, I look at Colorado, and I look at Carolina.
Yeah.
And then I look at New York and Edmonton and say those guys need to prove that they're dedicated to doing that.
Right? I'll leave you with this and we'll end it with this. Take a look at the point leaders in the National Hockey League playoffs who are forwards. McDavid, Draisaitl, Zibanejad, Tkachuk, Rantanen, McKinnon.
I did it yesterday. They're all top six. They're all top six and all top four defensemen. Even if
so you read me. That's exactly where I was going. Take a look at the leading defensemen with points: Evan Bouchard, Cale Makar, Hedman's gone, but Hedman, Devin Taves, Quinn Hughes. Miro Heiskanen.
But like, which one of them? Like, pick out a guy in that list. If you look at the top 15, who's unwilling to do the things that I'm talking about?
Do you think the Canadians have those guys already in-house who a couple of years from now can be in that category of top point getters for forwards, top point getters for defensemen?
Yes, but they need more. Yes.
Yes, but they don't need just
like I said, like, you don't think Nick Suzuki is like Wyatt Johnson? Like,
yes, 100%. I do.
He's willing to do stuff, and he will score the big points and the goals too. Like,
Slafkovsky,
like Rantanen had.
Mind you, Wyatt Johnson is 4 years younger. My God, he's got a huge ceiling. Wow.
Ranton in the top 15 playoff scorers right now. He's got 2 goals and eight or nine points.
He's got 9 points, and McDavid's got 12.
I know, and like honestly, Tony, like if Ranton hadn't dressed for those 5 games, the Colorado Avalanche still would have won them. But like, do I see Slafkovsky as that type of player, like Nikushkin, like burying big goals and making big plays? Yeah. I see Caden Gooley as a playoff player, as a shutdown beast who can play huge minutes? And do, absolutely. They need more. Do I think Montembeau, Primo, Fowler, between the three of them, end up with solutions for the Canadiens and Nets to be good enough to win playoff games? Yes.
And you know how they can do it? They can win the lottery tomorrow night and end up getting the first pick overall in the draft. And at that point, draft Macklin Celebrini, you would think, and that's a pretty good step in the right direction. All right, okay, once again, NHL Draft Lottery Special tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern with Graham McCagg right off the top, and Simo the Snake Boisvert is going to join me 30 minutes in. So watch the Sick Podcast tomorrow night on YouTube, Facebook, and on Twitter. Eric Engels, we'll talk to you soon, my man.
It was fun. Enjoy the lottery tomorrow.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You too, bud. Marinaro, shout out to accidentinsurance.com. At accentassurance.com is the website. You know all insurance isn't created equal, and you know where to find the right solution for you. Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop insurance for you to find the right product right on the money. Whatever your insurance needs, home, automobile, or business, call the Accent team at 514-363-3636 and get the right solution at the right price. Accentassurance.com. Special thanks to all of you watching on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It's our way of feeling the love. For Shane Gomo and Master Control, I'm Tony Marinaro. La felicita.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.